It's been more than a month since Pope Francis's visit to Philadelphia, and talk of traffic boxes and fences ruled the news cycle. Now, city leaders are gathering to talk about what went well and what didn't. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Officials met last week for a confab on the Pope's visit. Everett Gillison, deputy mayor and chief of staff to Mayor Michael Nutter, and emergency management director Samantha Phillips sat down with WHYY's Katie Culinary to share conclusions.
Was there a moment when you realized sort of the enormity of what the city was taking on?
For me, as soon as it was that the Pope was going to come, I immediately said, oh my God, we have a lot of planning to do.
Yeah, I think for me it was, OEM is a small office for 30 people. And as soon as everybody started working 7 days a week leading up to it very early on, I think that's when it really hit me that this is a massive undertaking for the city as a whole. And then I think it really hit me at the airport when he was leaving, just that final sigh of relief and pride, like tremendous pride in the city.
So let's do the papal visit by the numbers. Do we know how many people actually showed up for this thing?
No, we do not. However, we do have from the Secret Service that about 1.1 million people over that two-day period went through the magnetometers. We do not know how many people actually did not go through the mags, and we all know that there were a lot that couldn't even make it through the mags. So we will never know, probably, how many people actually were at any one thing. But it pales in the comparison to the millions of people that watched from the time the Pope landed in Cuba through the time that the Pope left in Philadelphia, which was covered by a number of people in the media, and that put Philadelphia not only on the map, but put us at the center of literally the media universe for those, especially those 2 to 3 days. So if 20 million people and impressions and media buys, what would it have cost the city if we had to buy all that we came through with that positive image that went out there for the city of Philadelphia? I've asked the World Meeting of Family, who had a communications unit, to put together what that would look like and what the value of that would be. I think that's important for us to know as well.
A major criticism throughout the spring through the summer leading up to the papal event was from residents and businesses in Philadelphia saying that information was being rolled out too slowly. There was a lot of confusion, lots of different maps being put out there, information trickling out to the press. Did the city know more than you were able to say?
Always. Always. I mean, that's just the way, the nature of public safety. People always want more information than we want to give. And we are not in the position to give. I would remind people that most of the time people were always worried about the unknown. And when you don't know something, you ask a lot of questions. And sometimes, because this was an NSSE, which I still, people don't believe they know what it truly means. The designation requires that, you know, we work together with the Secret Service, and there are certain things that that agency just did not want to put out in the public sphere.
Did the Secret Service, the Vatican, the World Meeting of Families, these other big partners, did they prevent the city from releasing information that you wanted to release sooner?
I wouldn't say prevent.
Right. I mean, we just wouldn't have done that, because right, this is about being in step with one another. And if we do our own thing and go rogue, we have ruined the partnership. And one of the reasons for not sharing information is because the size, the complexity, the parade route changed multiple times. And it is very difficult, if not impossible, to correct wrong information.
Looking ahead to the Democratic National Convention next summer, they're really two very different events in a lot of ways. So what, if anything, has the city learned that it can take from this experience and use for the DNC?
I mean, first and foremost, working with the Secret Service, and our Philadelphia Police and the Secret Service have a very good relationship. So I think we'll be in a really good place for the DNC from that perspective. You know, just how we share information across all these different agencies is something that we can use moving forward, how we communicate with city employees, our own workforce, and with the public are all, you know, key takeaways. Completely different events. It's almost impossible to draw those parallels, but the concepts are there.
One piece of advice for the city's mayor-elect, Jim Kenney.
always remember that to be open to great planning, invest in great people, and trust that they will be able to get you through, because no matter what, as mayor, it's always going to come back to your table. And people will look to you for that leadership to make sure that they can handle whatever it is that comes your way.
Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you.
WHYY's Katie Culinary speaking with Philadelphia Deputy Mayor Everett Gillison and Emergency Management Director Samantha Phillips. The tests that medical students take on their way to becoming a physician now include questions about military medicine. From WHYY's health desk, Tanya English reports.
The National Board of Medical Examiners in Philadelphia develops the long, arduous test that sometimes takes 7 or 8 hours to complete. Test developer Steve Haste says the new questions give medical students a chance to demonstrate their knowledge of traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic syndrome, and other health concerns for some veterans.
Most doctors and nurses have not received any training in dealing with soldiers and deployment and military service issues.
But that's changing. Robert Like leads a program called Warrior-Centric Healthcare at the Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School.
One of the problems is that often we as clinicians never ask the question, have you ever served?
Many former soldiers get healthcare outside of the Veterans Affairs system. And Like says civilian doctors need to know what to look for.
If you served and wore heavy Kevlar armor, have you developed musculoskeletal problems, arthritis?
Rutgers is training future physicians to be ready to care for mental health trouble and chronic stress. But Like says it's also important to know that most veterans return home and do well after war. I'm Tanya English, WHYY News.
The Philadelphia Craft Show opens at the Pennsylvania Convention Center later this week. Now in its 39th year, it features 195 artists selected by the Philadelphia Art Museum to sell their work. From WHYY's Arts and Culture desk, Peter Crimmins reports that this year it sprouted a citywide art fair called Craft Now.
The idea of Craft Now was hatched by art consultant Clara Hollander when she returned from the Art Basel Fair in Miami, buzzing about how to showcase Philadelphia's craft scene, and she thought she could leverage the Art Museum's craft show.
The craft show is a commercial endeavor where people go to buy things, and it's to support the Philadelphia Art Museums. What we're giving is we're exhibiting the best of the best. It's not for sale necessarily.
This is the first year of Craft Now, and it's starting with just 4 galleries showing the work of 14 artists. One of them is Paula Winokur. Winokur makes large sculptures from big chunks of porcelain. They look raw and cracked. The sculptures are on display at the Clay Studio and at the Philadelphia Art Alliance, and they're modeled after ice glaciers, which she has visited up close to get a sense of their splits, their splinters, and crevices.
They are gorgeous. I mean, it's huge sculptures. You're this big and there's this giant, you know, I've been influenced by the phenomenon. And my idea has been to take what I'm seeing and bring it into the gallery and have people think about it.
What Winokur wants people to think about is climate change and melting glaciers. Her husband, on the other hand, has no message behind his work. Robert Winokur is showing work at the Art Museum and at the Clay Studio as part of Craft Now. He makes whimsical assemblages of shapes that can resemble houses.
I had a show in Limoges, in France, and the woman wanted to know if those were the concentration camp huts. So I said, no, and let it be at that. But what she saw was what she brought to it.
The 4 exhibitions at the Art Alliance, the Clay Studio, the Art Museum, and the Center for Art and Wood feature work by 14 fellows of the American Craft Council. Organizers hope to eventually expand the number of exhibitions and turn this into a destination event. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf and state lawmakers gathered in Harrisburg late this afternoon and pledged to continue talking. Lawmakers have been trying to hammer out a budget deal for more than 4 months. They said yesterday they agreed on a broad framework for the budget. Details still need to be worked out. Some 200 advocates for a struggling, historically black college in Pennsylvania rallied at the state capitol today, pressing officials to help save the school amid plunging enrollment. Cheney University's enrollment of about 700 undergrads and graduate students is about half what it was in 2009. Philadelphia developer Bart Blatstein says he's considering reopening Atlantic City's former Showboat as a casino, but it might also be used for offices or entertainment. Blatstein's $23 million purchase of the former casino from Stockton University was supposed to close yesterday, but was pushed back until January 15th. 58 degrees, rain falling at 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. Showers this evening, remaining cloudy overnight, low 50 degrees. Tomorrow starts off cloudy, turning partly sunny, high Veterans Day around 62. Rain returns on Thursday, high around 60 degrees.
Still ahead.
First, I wasn't, you know, totally in love with the idea of just being in a Speedo in front of a few hundred people, but I got over that pretty quickly.
Penn athletes strut their stuff to raise money for school sports programs when Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The University of the Arts supports WHYY and is hosting a graduate open house Saturday, November 21st. It's an opportunity to learn about UArt's master's programs in studio art, museum studies, art and music education, design for social impact, product design, jazz studies, theater, educational program design, and educational technology. UArt's graduate open house, Saturday, November 21st, 2 to 5 p.m., 211 South Broad Street. Details at uarts.edu.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Addiction can test a family's strength. When someone you love is struggling with addiction, you struggle too. Karen can help restore peace in your family. For more than 60 years, Karen has worked in the field of addiction treatment and behavioral health care, helping to restore the lives of thousands of patients and their families. Karen will help you take the next step. A confidential and no-obligation assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at caron.org.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Quick, jot down the first thing that pops into your head when you hear the words University of Pennsylvania. Ivy League, West Philly, and Quaker likely made some lists. Bodybuilding, probably not. But as WHYY's Aaron Mozell reports, the school has a rich student tradition with the 23rd annual Mr. and Mrs. Penn competition unfolding on campus last night.
Inside a squeaky clean, state-of-the-art gym, a couple dozen student-athletes are pumping their way through an early evening workout. They're all preparing for the spring track season. A few, though, are also lifting for a chance to be crowned Mr. or Miss Penn. The annual amateur event is organized as a fundraiser for the school's track and field program.
First, I wasn't, you know, totally in love with the idea of just being in a Speedo in front of a few hundred people, but I got over that pretty quickly.
For most of the year, Penn senior Sam Mattis is one of the Ivy League's top discus throwers. But for one night, the muscled finance major sets that aside, steps onto a stage nearly naked, and flexes to music, Arnold Schwarzenegger style.
I try to make a complete ass of myself. So last year, what was the song I did? I think I did the WAP, which like has a dance that was popular back then. And the year before that, I did What Does the Fox Say as my song, and kind of did a dance to that with like kind of poses for each animal.
Dog goes woof, cat goes meow, bird goes tweet, and mouse goes...
Junior architecture student Cora Butler is normally pretty reserved.
I don't even talk in class.
That shyness disappears when she's vying to be Miss Penn.
It's just like a great thing to be a part of, and it's always so like body positive, and you really just feel good about yourself no matter what. It's like a fun, goofy type of thing.
Goofy, but not completely silly. Yes, there was plenty of body oil to go around last night, but the 30-plus competitors on stage had clearly practiced the list of required poses, including one called Most Muscular, an all-out body flex.
Okay, kill him. Abdominal thigh, let's go. Yeah, there you go. Bang!
The students also seem to be having a lot of fun, especially during their individual routines.
I know there's gonna be...
One even incorporated a fencing sword into her routine. Another competitor became a human marionette, mimicking an old NSYNC music video. Up to 10 points were awarded for physique. The remaining 20 points went to creativity. Here's how head judge Vincent Faust broke it down before the show.
Everybody thinks it's just the muscle head, but it's going to be a person who has a good presentation, who wows the crowd with it, and who's going to enjoy it on the stage.
In the end, Mr. and Miss Penn went to a sophomore studying political science and a full-time social worker at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital. Caitlin Chin found weightlifting after a knee injury ended her marathon running days. She says the competition shows that Penn isn't just about books.
We do have some brains behind us, but, you know, we are involved with other things, so it's good to see, you know, the show bring that together.
I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
Preseason prognosticators peg the Eagles at 10-6 for the season. The midpoint 4-4 record misses the mark. Let's see where the Birds can go from here with Philadelphia Daily News sports columnist Marcus Hayes. Marcus, welcome back to NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And let's look at the bright side to start. It looks like the schedule is favorable in the second half.
Yes, there's only really two games that they should lose. They could wind up with 10 wins and cruise right into the playoffs for the home game.
And with that, they'd be 10-6, I believe, for a third consecutive season.
That's right. And Chip Kelly, who is the absolute supreme commander, would be able to say, see, I told you so. We didn't get any worse. Maybe we were a little bit better. You know, they'll have a hard time beating New England in New England and Arizona in Philadelphia. But the rest of those games are very winnable, especially, I believe, the next three.
Though by many measures, when they bid adieu to Nick Foles, LeSean McCoy, and Jeremy Maclin, more or less gutting the team, was the intent to make a better product than merely 10-6?
A better product for the long term. Certainly they believe that Sam Bradford, who was a number one overall pick when he was drafted, is a better quarterback, more talented quarterback than Nick Foles, and that's probably right. He's probably having a much better season this year. And long term, if he stays healthy, he could be the answer. DeMarco Murray, who was the coincidental replacement for LeSean McCoy, it's not that they expected him to come to them, but he's been very good the last couple of games, and he's healthier now than he was at the beginning of the season when he had a hamstring problem. They have not replaced Jeremy Maclin, though, and I don't know that they will anytime soon. It's kind of been receiver by committee. They led the league in drops going into the big win at Dallas, where the receivers did play extremely well, and you know, it's an interesting team. It's a team kind of without a real identity past its defensive line, which it's really been a revelation. The defensive line and the two outside linebackers have been the foundation of the four wins.
Back to quarterback Sam Bradford. What to make of his learning curve? He sure looked great the second half last week.
Well, you know, it's remarkable. He hadn't really played in about 22 months. When he took his first snap in September for the Philadelphia Eagles, and he looked like it. He hadn't been on his twice-repaired knee, and he looked like it. He hasn't played a lot of NFL football, period, because of his injuries. He missed about half a season, I believe his second year in St. Louis, with a bad ankle sprain. So he doesn't have a lot of snaps as a starting NFL passer. So just to have him function in this offense at this point is remarkable, and to have him play as well as he played in Dallas on Sunday night is almost miraculous.
Can we then give DeMarco Murray a similar pass, or learning a new system from what he was used to doing with Tony Romo last year in Dallas?
Certainly, you're learning a new system with a far inferior line. Dallas's offensive line is probably the best in the business, if not the best in the business for 2 years now. And apparently DeMarco Murray has been fighting a hamstring injury since the first or second day of training camp, an injury that seems to be getting better as he progresses through the season. Offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur last week, who sort of let the cat out of the bag, you know, he's healthy kind of for the first time all year, and that's why we think he's going to be better. And he was. He had his best game in Dallas, so he was spectacular last year. I think he's just been hurt this year.
Run down the injury report. Who's out and who might still come back to help during the last push of the season?
Well, the big hit on the face of it is rookie linebacker Jordan Hicks, who might have saved their season by being such an effective player in the absence of linebackers Kiko Alonso, D'Amico Ryans, and Michael Kendricks. He's gone for the year with a torn pectoral muscle, but Ryans, Kendricks, and Alonso look like they all could play this coming week against the Miami Dolphins, which gives you probably the kind of a boost. So if those guys are back for the second half, it could be huge.
It certainly works out well at the Eagles play in the mediocre NFC East Division. Wouldn't it be fun if the final game at the New York Giants is for all the marbles?
I think you might be overrating it as mediocre. I'm not sure it approaches mediocrity yet. But, yeah, that Giants game should have some significant ramifications because the Giants should be right around 500 at that point as well. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the middle. Some of the greatest memories for the Eagles in the last 15 years have happened in the middle. So, it might be good karma for the Eagles to be going there with everything on the line.
Marcus, thanks for offering insight.
My pleasure, Dave. Thank you for having me.
Philadelphia Daily News sports columnist Marcus Hayes on Newsworks Tonight. Finally this evening, it's never too late to pursue your dreams. The director of media relations for SEPTA announced today that she's leaving that post to become a full-time novelist. Little did Jerry Williams' colleagues know, she says, that she's been writing on the weekends for years. Another aspect of her life that some may not have known about, Williams spent 26 years with the FBI.
They didn't realize that I, you know, was a gun-toting FBI agent, you know, investigating serious and major, you know, financial and economic fraud cases.
And now she plans to parlay that experience into a second crime fiction novel. Her agent is now shopping around the first book entitled Pay to Play. She'll continue as SEPTA's top spokesperson through Thanksgiving. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen at newsworks.org. Allentown could serve as a landing spot for Syrian refugees, and we'll have more on that story on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
The University of Delaware MBA supports WHYY. The UD part-time MBA program offers busy professionals the opportunity to pursue their education and their careers. With flexible online and on-campus options and a variety of specializations, the program can be structured to meet both busy schedules and help with career advancement. Their next drop-in information session will be held on Wednesday, November 18th from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Learn more at udmba.com. The University of Delaware MBA. It is all about you.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, music that speaks the voice of America. The Philadelphia Orchestra and Yannick Nézet-Séguin perform Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring, plus the world premiere of Hannibal's One Land, One River, One People, with choruses from around the community. Tickets at philorc.org or at 215-893-1999. This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Kimmel Center, an American celebration with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Drexel University's Dorn Seif School of Public Health supports WHYY and encourages listeners interested in improving population health here in Philadelphia and around the globe to attend a graduate open house on November 21st. It's an opportunity to learn about the benefits of a public health degree from Philadelphia's accredited School of Public Health. Registration for Drexel's November 21st graduate open house at drexel.edu/mphopenhouse.